Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, I got my very special guest, Jeff Brady. Jeff has been on our show on a number of occasions, and Jeff, to me, is the resident expert. I mean, he's far too modest and full of humility to probably regard himself as such, but I regard him as an expert in all things UFO, aerial unknown craft, videography, and analysis. And I couldn't think of anyone better to bring on at this stage to talk about this ongoing wave, which has been derided in some circles as being mere drones, because I wanted to, have Jeff show footage from some of the captured at some of the places where a lot of these events are taking place, Hudson River, New York, and other places, right? So without any further ado, Jeff Brady, welcome back to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
James, thanks. It's an honor. I appreciate it.
The honor's all
Uh,
mine.
well, I'm not an expert, but I appreciate that. We have been filming UFOs out in that area, New Jersey and New York area, in the past, I don't know, 10 to 11 years, a few times a week, specifically to film UFOs. So I was doing that for a while. I accrued a lot of footage. I kept it on hard drives and DV tapes for years and years, and then put a documentary together that's called New York Skywatch: A Decade of UFOs. And if your viewers are interested in that, it's NewYorkSkywatch.com to watch that video. And I do have some footage prepared if you want to, that we're going to look at coming up. But I want to talk about also the word drone, James, and how that has become a euphemism for a range of things and condition people just to throw that word around. I don't know, it started maybe 8 years ago, if I recall. But I want to get your feedback on that word.
Yeah, and see, to me, it's a continuation of when they began using the term stealth, right, to explain away a lot of UFO anomalous aerial activity. That was really pushed by super spook, Admiral Bobby Inman, who was head of NSA, head of Defense Intelligence Agency, deputy director of the CIA, sat on the board of Science Applications International, a corporation. If anyone could be termed the super spook, it would be Admiral Bobby Ray Inman. And, he was caught flat-footed in a telephone interview with the late, great Bob Exler, former NASA robotics mission specialist. And in that conversation, Bob Exler said, "Well, do you see any possibility of these recovered vehicles being examined by the general scientific community outside of military circles?" And Admiral Inman said, "Well, 20 years ago, I would have said no, but maybe as, times have changed, maybe that possibility exists now." Bob Exler pointed out, well, if 20 years ago the answer was no, then 20 years ago they had alien recovered craft, okay, straight up. And so they started using Admiral Inman in these documentaries and in these segments about UFOs. And he was the first one to really start pushing the stealth excuse to explain away all these UFO sightings. Well, what they've done now, and this harkens back to what Michael Tesserian talked about, the talismanic invocation of certain words, phrases, and expressions, which have almost a mesmerizing hypnotic effect on the listening and the viewing audience. And one of them is drones, because there's two things that are noteworthy about this day and age. One, we're in the age of the portable video camera, because everyone's walking around, just about everyone's walking around with a digital device, a phone, an iPad, whatever, right? Secondly, so these are going to be captured. These are going to be viewed, whether the mainstream media wants it or not, right? Secondly, in light of that, the lamestream media, in order to stay ahead of the curve, they began hypnotically droning on, pardon the pun, about drones over and over and over. These are drones, these mystery drones, and it caught on like wildfire, because a lot of these people that have taken on the mantra of the drones, they don't do their own research. They don't know what you've done. They don't know about the long history of crash retrievals and the back engineering and analysis of alien technology going back at least to the early 1940s. They don't know any of that. So on the one hand, you have these mass sightings going on worldwide. Again, one aspect of the drone syndrome is it's very American-centric. It doesn't take into account what's being reported worldwide. It's not taking into account because I'm sure real quote-unquote drones are thrown into the mix to add confusion. I'm absolutely sure of that. Some of the things I've seen, I'm not really impressed with. But a lot of the orbs, lights, clusters, and so typical of the mainstream media and so typical of what David Icke calls the alternative mainstream is they don't take into account eyewitness testimony. A law enforcement officer says upwards of 50 or more illuminated orbs, drones, come out of the ocean. It's like they don't understand the practical difficulties of engineering a drone in order to make it a submersible object and still retain its luminosity.
And the battery?
And the battery.
You can make it waterproof, I suppose. But yeah, all of those issues are glaring when you begin to use one word to describe a range of aerial phenomena. And it also keeps sort of cages the mind into a man-made.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Blue beam, because it ties in with all that. The fake alien invasion. This is a worldwide alien non-human event that's going on. But it has been going. I've been saying for several years now, Jeff, that we're undergoing a worldwide UFO flap, to use the old term. A couple of quick points I want to make.
UFO wave, right?
UFO wave.
I think that's the larger thing is a wave.
Exactly. We've had them in the past. But the thing about it was people weren't carrying around digital devices back in the time, 1973.
Social media.
That's
playing
right.
A big role. So you have, yeah. So just to pick up on that briefly, you have an invasion, but not of UFOs necessarily. I think you have an invasion of human consciousness into the sky with a large number of people becoming aware and taking the situation into their own hands with available technology, because those cameras on those phones, I think they have high ISO rating. Like those apertures can open up digitally now and take in a lot of light at night. So you get some pretty good accurate depictions of what's going on in the sky. Although the footage, I've seen some really good footage. I think it's still filtered. I'm not sure, you know, I've seen drone footage of what appear to be man-made objects, but it's very difficult. Those Sony A7 series cameras that have the high ISO can capture some really good things at night. And I just started using that for a couple of years and then slowed down from filming for a while. So yeah, you have all these people out there filming now, and it looks like an invasion, right? But it's not. I think even an uptick in the business as usual traffic of UFOs or UAPs or aliens, whatever they are, will look like an invasion if you have a bunch of people filming and posting day and night. And then you get into these people who are seeing chemplanes in the spraying operations for the first time. And I saw a video of somebody in New Jersey catching a spray plane at night. Whoa, they're spraying us. Look at this. Whoa. And I thought, wow, this is good. I hope it doesn't cause any panic. I don't think it will, because there's such a pressure to just keep this down in society. But you do have these moments where it is a shocking thing. This is a vector, he's pointing out, that could spread disease. This is a vector that could cause a range of harm to any sovereign nation, yet it's allowed to continue for decades and decades. Okay, so we could touch on the Gods of Eden here with the author William Bromley, but did you want to respond here to some of this material?
Yeah, just a quick couple of points about the behavior of these so-called drones, what the eyewitnesses are describing. We've had near misses with passenger planes and airliners. We've had air crews reporting clusters, large numbers of these objects above the cloud cover. So we're talking 30, 35,000, 37,000 feet, right? And either they're passing by large swarms of them for hundreds of miles, or they're being followed by these things, right? Hardly drone behavior when you consider the activity. And also, when people have sent up regular drones, the batteries die, radiological, electromagnetic effects that are occurring when these objects pass over people's cars and houses, the clocks are stopping, people are getting sick, people are reporting getting sick, could be from radiological effects.
Really?
So there's a lot of things, and these things are large, car size are bigger, right?
Right.
And they're coming in and out of the ocean. I mean, the technical difficulties of having an installation underground, underwater rather, right? You know, right. Think of maintenance, logistics, all that stuff. And they're way out in the ocean. People just happen to be there. But you're right. We were in the camcorder age, and now we've shifted into the phone digital device age. And so everybody and their brother has these things, and their social media to put it on. I would suggest that had people had these devices in 1973, the great humanoid wave, great UFO wave around the world, and other similar UFO waves, we would have seen similar things, right? Mm. But because they use the talismanic invocation of the word drones, that shunts everyone who hasn't done our kind of research into a certain paradigm. And also the alternative media, the so-called truthers, are chirping blue beam, fake alien invasion. And you see, that is a form of control also. The blue beam narrative was pushed really hard. I mean, everyone goes and points out, you know, the comments of Carol Rosen. That was only one person. And she's quoting a guy, you know, Wernher von Braun, who used to, you know, I mean, the guy was a Nazi and, you know, involved in major hoaxes with NASA. It's like he was hardly, you know, you can pick and choose. But in this regard, I don't really consider the things that Wernher von Braun may have had any relative, you know, credence or value or validity, right? If it was part of an agenda, yes, I can see how we could say, well, watch out down the track, there's going to be a fake alien invasion. But as many people know, the invasion occurred a long time ago. This, you know, we all have confirmation bias. The drones fit into a confirmation bias of people who are into the blue beam narrative and don't believe aliens exist and have not done the research. So this works at very many different levels. So yeah, I just wanted to throw that out, that there's radiological effects, batteries of drones dying out, electromagnetic effects on homes and cars and people, right? So, I mean, normal drones don't do these kinds of things. And plus, you're seeing orbs disgorging a number of smaller orbs or orbs of the same size. So so we're having, you know, there's physics aspects that come into this too, which
right.
Don't really, so you got the floor.
Yeah. So people who've been filming this phenomena, you know, prior to this wave here, they know that the releasing of these other orbs from a larger orb or that kind of dynamic going on in the sky is not uncommon. I mean, the whole thing is uncommon, but these things often happen. We just, for your viewers, to go over the area where I'm kind of familiar with, since I lived in this part of the United States for many years, is the New York, New Jersey area. And from what I understand, there were 1,000 reports early on just in New Jersey, in 12 counties in New Jersey. And what I also read was that they were spotted over water reservoirs, electric transmission lines. And we know that there have been reports of UFOs, real UFOs, siphoning off energy from electricity transmission lines, solar panel installations, rail stations. This is what they've been filmed over, police departments, other military installations. The Staten Island borough president wrote a letter to the FAA and the FBI in early December requesting an investigation into the drone sightings. And that in and of itself is very interesting. Staten Island, for your viewers, if they don't know, this area is an island and it looks out into the New York Harbor and the Atlantic Ocean going out to, you know, past the Verrazano Bridge. And it's a hotspot for UFOs. Lots of air traffic, of course, but it's a hotspot. Other areas, just to go over that are hotspots, are the waterways from the Hudson River into the Bronx, Hell's Gate, which is where the Hudson River branches off into the Harlem River and comes in. So you have brackish water meeting salt water from the Long Island Sound that goes down into the East River. But you have this sort of pooling and swirling of brackish water there that creates its own phenomena, very heavy on UFO activity right in that area. Comes down between Brooklyn, Queens, and Manhattan, and into the New York Harbor, and then the Atlantic Ocean. Up above that whole area, you have Bear Mountain, you have Stewart Air Base, you have Pine Bush, which is the book, Ellen Crystal's book, Silent Invasion, focuses in on. The Hudson Valley, a lot of your viewers may know, that's a very important UFO hotspot. And northern New Jersey, Bergen County, it's always been a UFO hotspot over there. And that means that any time of the year, anytime, if you go out for a few hours and point your camera to the sky, and if you know what you're doing, within a couple hours, you're going to see some phenomena out there. That's how hot of an area it is. So imagine multiplying that, you know, by 100, by 1,000, by 10,000. So you have 10,000 people out there because you have 1,000 reports. Multiply that, and you're going to have a manufactured UFO flap, UFO wave in an already designated hotspot. Why is it a hotspot? Well, even Ellen Crystal, who wrote Silent Invasion, mentions here, I think I can quote some of what she wrote. She talks about this above Stewart Air Base and Stewart Air Base.
Point out how old that book is also for the viewers and listeners who may not be familiar with Ellen Crystal or the book, because she wrote this a while back ago.
In the 80s, right? She was investigating in the late 70s and into the 80s. So the book, I think, is around 1988, 87 maybe is when it came out. But it chronicles a lot of her investigations from the 80s. Here it is. It wasn't until 1980 in Pine Bush that I realized I had been looking at a triangle-shaped craft similar but not identical to the boomerang or flying wing, the Westchester wing. Westchester is up there in New York, described in J. Allen Hynek's book, Night Siege. And the aliens, she writes, apparently were building underground structures all over and had plenty of previous experience. Her friend had plenty of experience out west. The air venting took place in the flat fields in Pine Bush, where it was through some kind of piping. The venting was moved around the field so that a person wouldn't get blasted by the airstream more than once at the same spot and would probably just dismiss the event as natural atmospheric phenomena. So they're very covert. They know what they're doing. They're watching a lot of elements within the human observer so they can remain, you know, as covert and stealth as possible. I had accidentally been in the right spot at the right time, she writes. Moreover, I was fortunate to be with someone who understood what was going on and could explain it to her. If the venting was in the fields, I thought, and structures really were hidden beneath the field, where would the entrances be? It took perhaps 2 seconds to figure out they would be in the woods. I said, oh my God, what's the matter? Dale asks. If you tell me the entrances are in the woods, I'm going to scream. He says, not only in the woods, but in all the mines that have been closed down. And she writes, everything fell into place. Well, that connects into another prominent UFO filmer out in western Pennsylvania named Allison Cruz, who was filming some of the best fake plane where the craft mimic planes above abandoned coal mines. Okay, so that area for your viewers is right above Stewart Air Base, which is, I think, is a quasi-commercial military base. And that was shut down for a number of hours last week, and because of the drone, quotes, sightings, or whatever they were. But so you have some interesting stuff going on. Wright-Patterson Air Base was also closed down. So what are we talking about here? Well, so we know your viewers obviously, not obviously, but probably know that the Area 51 and a number of downed alien craft were, the remains and biologics, I believe, were shipped to a particular area in Wright-Patterson. And this mimics the film Independence Day, where the aliens that they had captured were activated when the invasion occurred. So the aliens that they had underground suddenly came to life when the mothership approached. So I don't know. I was just thinking about that. I know it's out there, but you also have the element. I'm sure you've heard of, you know, these speculations where we're on the verge of, you know, a real nasty war, but we're also at the precipice of major leadership changes, political paradigm shifts. You have Syria, you have Germany. You have, okay, of course, Ukraine, Russia, you have Israel, you have, I know I'm missing a couple of key, oh, Korea, South Korea. Major political paradigm shifts occurring here, and are UFO entities responding to this? And then we better get the government, then, you know, we better cover this up. Let's get government, you know, let's get our drones out there to muddy the water. One scenario that's possible. But you also have potential, could a catastrophic underground seismic event be approaching that these entities know about? And then you have the same scenario where they become activated and then you have the dilution with the drones. And what type of aliens that we all, you know, most people know at this point that are underground? Well, you have the mantids, the grays. According to abductee reports, we know that that's a location for human and human hybrid programs. According to people like David Huggins have pointed that out. So that's, you know, if these scenarios are going on underground with these entities, that those are very sensitive areas that could, that, you know, they would get out of the way or maybe, you know, respond to potential seismic events or something like that. And I'm just speculating. I don't know. Have you thought about some of these things?
Yes. I've been ruminating along the same lines. Remember the capabilities of these craft, folks. We've got video going back decades of saucers and different types of craft flying right into active volcanoes in Mexico, for example. So, you know, they can do things that we can't do, generally speaking. And I'm glad you brought up the war/nuclear issue, because I've been thinking along the same lines. It's going to feature be featured as a main part of a commentary I'm doing at the moment. We know at the onset of the so-called contactee era, when people were having encounters oftentimes with human-looking aliens, and they were told, you know, there were oftentimes a scenario would unfold like they were taken on board, they were asked if they wanted to come on board, they came on board, they're given a tour of the craft, and then the aliens imparted the humans, you know, with a message. You know, we're concerned about the nuclear weapons development. You know, we detected nuclear explosions in our world. And some of these aliens were saying, we're not even from your dimension or your plane of existence. We're from other planes of existence. But by constantly, and, you know, all someone has to do is go check the record, how many nuclear above ground, underground nuclear tests have been fired off over the decades, right? Hundreds of them.
You can see it on Google Earth.
You can see it on Google Earth. Yeah. And then these aliens are saying, you know, it's not only having an impact on your world, it's having an impact on our world. So we're begging you, please tell your leaders to stop doing it. Okay, so that's one general faction of a number of alien groups that don't want us to blow our planet up, because it's not only going to mess us up, but it's going to mess their worlds up. And they're not even, and they're not
so
even saying
it's something in the fabric of reality, atomically.
Yes.
So, and that could be the garden that they're tearing apart.
Exactly. And we know, those of us who've done the research again, that certain ET races have been deeply interested in following the development of nuclear weapons here on Earth. There
Robert
are reports.
Hastings.
Yeah, Robert Hastings' classic book, UFOs and Nukes. We have the book by Fawcett and Greenwood, Clear Intent. Later on, it got changed to the title to UFO Cover Up. Lots of accounts of the 1975 UFO wave when the Northern Tier Strategic Air Command bases from Loring Air Force Base in Maine all the way to Malmstrom and Air Force Base in Montana, Minot Air Force Base in North Dakota, et cetera, et cetera. And the accounts we've heard of these saucers and football-shaped craft, 100 yards long, red, glowing, hovering over nuclear launch facilities, hovering over nuclear silos, deactivating nuclear warheads, taking them offline. And we've also seen, Rendlesham Forest was a classic example. RAF Bentwaters was the largest repository of tactical nuclear weapons in December 1980. We're approaching that anniversary. Happened December 25th, 1980, memory serves. And, you know, about 40 Air Force personnel surrounded a landed craft, right? And
that
one
was
of the
proven to be a hoax, I read.
No, but that's just, that's what they say. But I've spoken to some of the key witnesses, Larry Warren, what have you. That's, I'm satisfied it happened. There's been so many people that have talked about it. And one of them, his name is Steve. I tried to get him, you know, to talk to him, but he's kind of, you know, backed off from me. Larry Warren knows who he is, but he was mentioned in the book written by Gary Heseltine. He was in the, one of the bunkers where they store the tactical nukes, and the place erupted into chaos because light beams were coming down into the underground bunker where they store the nukes, and people were running around like chickens with their heads cut off. And then also we look at what happened in the Soviet Union. There was one well-documented case a Soviet researchers came up with where a UFO hovered over a nuclear a missile silo and activated the go sequence. No matter what the technicians in a launch control facility try to do, they couldn't stop this thing from going into launch mode, right? And then it stopped on its own. The alien stopped it about 12 seconds before it was set to launch. And then you look at a book like the memoirs of Dean Acheson, former Secretary of State of the U.S. He talks in that book, which I've read, about it. He was in the Secretary of Defense office, Robert Lovett at the time, when huge waves of UFOs were coming down over the Arctic Circle, and they didn't know if it was a ICBM attack or not, and they were freaking out about it. Point being is these beings have had a marked interest in the nuclear weapons development here on Earth. They've deactivated missiles, made them go offline in America. A Malmstrom Air Force Base, classic example, at least 10 missiles they did that to. They've initiated a launch sequence in the Soviet Union. So there's at least one faction that doesn't want us to blow up our world and blow up their world. But then there's another faction, to me, and this is me talking here, not necessarily you or anyone else, you know, this planet run by these reptilian hybrid plantation managers are pushing for war. They're pushing for nuclear war. So we have this push-pull between the two. And I've said for some time, there's going to be open conflict in the skies. You're going to start seeing UFOs shooting at each other. And some of the video we've seen may suggest
that's all like that.
And also one quick point, and then you've got the floor. You know, they put out the meme that, oh, these drones are there to monitor the possibility of suitcase nukes and radiological materials being brought into the USA. That's nonsense. Department of Energy has had the nuclear emergency support team in operation for decades. Their job is to find and neutralize these types of threats. I haven't heard one influencer, podcaster, big shot military expert talk about NEST, right? And at the same breath, they're talking about these drones are there to monitor nuclear activity. They've already got the airborne assets. They've already got the ground-based assets to find these radiological dirty bombs, these suitcase nukes. They already have it in place. They don't need to use drones to whip everyone into a blue beam hysteria. So the floor is yours.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Just to pick up on the detection of radiation, from what I understand, concentrations of radiation like that can be detected by satellite. They have a range of ways to detect that as it moves around, as it travels around. They can see where it's going. That's what I was told by someone who is very knowledgeable about this. And for it to accidentally, I mean, I guess they could encase something in lead, but that would be very heavy and very obvious. Anyway, and also some of these genuine UFO craft do emit a certain type of radiation. So you have that in the mix as well. There was a blog, Substack, actually, that went into some interesting thinking. The guy's name is Dr. Peter Bregan and his wife, Ginger Bregan. And he writes, while there is no known malicious activity occurring, the reported sightings there do, however, highlight a gap in authorities. And so we urge Congress, this is in highlight, to pass important legislation that will expand existing counter-drone authorities so that we better are better prepared to identify and mitigate potential threats to infrastructure, et cetera. You know, so you had the city council people in New Jersey pushing in that direction. So it's a problem reaction solution issue to get funding for to pass a measure to increase surveillance, probably using drones here in the U.S. And he continues, and this is interesting to me because it connects into William Bromley. The DOD ran the critical first year and released COVID jabs on an unwitting America without so much as performing a single controlled clinical trial of their safety or efficacy. Yes and no on that. Pfizer did do a lot of test trials, but they failed to release the information on that, and that recently came out, which Naomi Wolf published the Pfizer papers book on that, which is, I urge your viewers to look into that. The jabs then killed more than 2 million Americans. This is Dr. Bregan talking. Still with zero coverage of the slaughter and chronic disease in the major media, the DOD got away with that. They could surely get away with Operation Drone Invasion. Right now, the DOD is playing dead while the dreaded drones are crawling all over the place. The DOD is not close to being so helpless. It's a trap. They are calculating that Operation Drone Invasion will make us feel so confused and helpless, we will give them anything they want to prevent a real invasion of drones. And I just thought that was interesting because the Department of Defense and the Department of Energy, you know, there are connections there with, they're not doing the best things for humanity and the people in this country, to put it lightly. And with what their involvement with the engineered pandemic, it's and not even being held accountable. I mean, we have a little bit with the FDA recently. I don't know if you're following the how the FDA was forced to release the Pfizer clinical trials, 450,000 pages that a judge ordered them to release, and that was released. And it showed the concentration of injury from the shot for a respiratory illness, the concentration of injuries was in the female reproductive area. So that is a depopulation bioweapon. And what does that lead into? It leads into William Bromley, Gods of Eden. We're still dealing with a priesthood class interacting with the custodial gods that for centuries have been, you know, maybe, you know, operating some kind of depopulation agenda, whether it's spraying us or, but it's not a simple process. You know, there's a lot of suffering. You have sacrifice zones in war, like you have in Ukraine and Russia right at that border. But he writes, Gods of Eden, William Bromley, the first reports of the plague came out of the East. They were confused, exaggerated, frightening, as reports from that quarter of the world so often are. Descriptions of storm and earthquakes, of meteors and comets, trailing noxious gases that killed trees and destroyed the fertility of the land. He writes, the above passage indicates that strange flying objects were doing more than just spreading disease. They were also spraying chemical or biological defoliants from the air. The above passage echoes the ancient Mesopotamian tablets, which describe defoliation of the landscape by ancient custodial gods. Many human casualties from the Black Death may have been caused by such defoliants. The connection between aerial phenomena and the plague had begun centuries before the Black Death. I suspect we're just seeing this happen again and again and again.
Yes, as above, so below, in the ingredients, and this is probably going to go on Rumble and Odyssey now because we invoked the bad language that YouTube's not going to like, but F YouTube.
Sorry.
No, it's quite all right, you know, because it needs to be brought out, right? So, you know, we'll just put it on Rumble and Odyssey. But you look at the ingredients of the stabs, Nanotech, graphene, little Hydra thingies. And when you look at them through a microphone, they're giving you the multiple finger, right? With all their tendrils and tentacles. So that's overkill.
Under the microscope, yes.
So if it knows it's being observed, it tries to like climb out of the Petri dish and things like that. So that's overkill. And also the envenomation that Dr. Brian Artis talks about. I'm satisfied that there's an aspect of that as well, which is well embedded in you know, the black ops literature of using, this goes back to ancient times, using, you know, toxins from shellfish, what have you, you know, as an assassination weapon. Point being is that all of that is overkill. You know, it's clearly there's a depopulation agenda. And then they're called the Quinta, La Quinta. I'm getting them mixed up with the hotel chain, but that team in Portugal or Spain that focuses their research on the ingredients of the stabs, they say straight up, this is alien technology. This is non-human. The
they
source
did
of this.
Say that.
They did say that.
Yeah,
right?
I remember.
And those were the more biblical fundamentalist perspectives, say this is demonic technology. This is demonic. So point of relevance is that it's a non-human agenda. When you,
I want to just add, James, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Please.
I did interview somebody who even went as far as to describe that the self-assembling lipid nanoparticles,
yes,
were similar to what Roger Lear was pulling out of abductees.
Yes, and Roger Lear, who I knew Daryl Sims pretty well too, that he used to work a lot with. Roger Lear wrote Aliens in the Scalpel. He was a podiatrist, and he extracted a number of implants out of real abductees, right?
Yeah.
And
their
they
feet too.
Yeah, the feet. They examine these things, and it's like some of them are like have no known human origin, right? The ingredients, they're just so off the wall that they could not have been manufactured on Earth, right? So there's that aspect to it. There's the biohazard aspect. If one tracks back to some of the Majestic papers, I'm satisfied the ones that I've perused are legitimate. They talk about as far back as the initial crash retrievals that we know of in the late 40s or early 40s, late 40s, that the biologics, as their euphemism they're using today, can be utilized as a basis for a biological warfare program. Right. And it didn't take them long to realize that because, again, this tracks back to the radiological dangers, the Department of Energy, because in its earliest incarnation, post-World War II, the Department of Energy was the Atomic Energy Commission, and the Manhattan Project split off. The military version was the Armed Forces Special Weapons Project. They had Special Engineering Detachment personnel, SEDs, in hazmat suits, working with the recovered craft and the biologics, the alien bodies. And some of these SED personnel died. They died from coming in contact with the alien bodies. So that told them right
radiation?
Away. Radiation? It could have been radiation, and it could have been some kind of infection. Because we know in the Virginia case.
Even wearing the suits.
Even wearing the suits.
Okay.
We know in the Virginia case, in Brazil, when these aliens were loose in the city of Virginia, and then they were tracked down by first responders, but also by the Brazilian military, one soldier jumped out of a car, wrapped his arms around a little ET, dragged him back to the car, and hauled him off to a military base. Within hours, that guy died a horrific death, which they could only describe speculatively as some kind of super bacteria, right? So point of relevance is that point of relevance.
That's the opposite of War of the Worlds.
Yes, exactly. Where the aliens succumbed because they had no natural immunity to all the microorganisms of Earth. But you flip it around on its head, and what's really going on is, you know, clearly some of these beings, you know, have organisms, microbes, pathogens, what have you, that
are deadly.
They're deadly. Okay. So, and it's ironic that they would try to invoke, oh, these drones are there to, you know, sniff out radiological dirty devices and suitcase nukes, when the Department of Energy, in its earliest iteration, going back to the Atomic Energy Commission, was deeply involved in the analysis of alien technology and alien life forms, right? So to say that the drones are out there to sniff out, you know, nuclear weapons, that's like putting the cart before the horse. And that's the problem that a lot of these surface level truthers have. They're not real archivists. They're not real students of history. Most of them, and this is not a criticism, it's an observation, they only got into this game post 9/11, post Oklahoma City. They're newbies basically at this. Whereas we've been studying the alien aspect for so long. Now, in the time you got left, why don't you whack on some of these videos and give us a narration to show these people, because this is a hot spot. New Jersey has been a hot spot from day one. That's why you're here, because you're the expert in all that. And that's very similar to what a lot of people are writing off as drones these days. And you're right.
Okay,
they do tend to hang around power plants, et cetera, et cetera. Go ahead.
Right. So I am on the New Jersey side of the Palisades looking east, and this is over the Bronx. And there is a someone I was communicating with who, see if I can get, you can still see it, right?
Yes, how long ago was this?
2020. Okay. So the librarian in the Bronx writes to me, okay, I haven't been on here in what looks like a week, but without posting too much about my location, yeah, right around there. But I now have more to write. Last Thursday, December 12th, I was watching TV around 6:30 and heard what I unconsciously put off to be a helicopter outside going overhead. Only when it started to get further away, I thought it sounded a little curious, but I didn't get up because I figured it would be gone by the time I got to the window. The next night, around the same time, I heard it again. It totally wasn't a helicopter. I went to the window to check it out, and that's what I wrote in this post. Well, mostly red and white lights flashing in patterns. One went south, one further into the distance went north. The next night, 6:30 came and went. I stopped thinking about it, and at 7:25, I was in the other room around the corner and really heard one loudly and went to the other room to look. Major big thing, maybe about the size of a Corolla, about three stories over the roof, one or two more in the distance. This one had green lights on the side and some others mostly red and pink. After it passed, I just let it go, thinking, would it matter if I called anyone? But I started thinking this one was actually following the trains, the train line. There's an above ground train line in that area. And that seems something like I might want to report to someone. So they called the cops to report the whole scenario. They suggested to call the MTA police. He said there were a bunch of reports in New Rochelle the night before. So that's some interesting information there.
An example of the UFO mimicry you talked about, where they assume the guise of, in this case, a cluster of balloons, but you see
Right.
this like aurora type glow, a purplish kind of glow around it.
Right. And it drops out an object, a very familiar dynamic with these objects. This is a cluster of them, and they're often seen separate as just an individual sphere flying around as well. But they are modular and they come together into these big clusters, or they can fly in a formation like birds, like starlings.
It's not looking like a cluster of balloons now, that's for sure.
Right. And you notice the bottom area there glowing, and it's and how it shifted. Look, you have like, this could be a group of aliens. Who knows? But look how there's that straight line right below the red, the red, and then you have the white. So that Bronx night vision shot at night was in 2020, and this is in the summer of 2013. It's not new. It's not new. This is in the Bronx. This is in the Bronx, a botanical garden. I was with a friend who sees UFOs all the time, and I know it looks like a balloon, but that's not a string attached to it. That's a very rigid element there. And then you have those very interesting colors in the Bronx during the day. I don't know if you saw that, James, but that stick-looking thing coming out just turned red. Yeah, I can hear my. It's a friend, Ryan.
It's got a lot of color in it.
I played a video of him. In our last interview,
Is that the camera moving around or is the object moving around?
shaking like that.
Yes.
It's handheld scenario. Yeah, unfortunately, just me handheld,
Oh, no, it's quite
zoomed
big.
in. Okay, this is 2012. I'm in a cemetery. Something just flew by there. Cemetery. So there were orbs flying around the gravestones, and I know it's a very popular thing. But this is in 2012, maybe earlier than that, and that's Manhattan right there in the distance. And there are these similar things here. Check it out. There it is. So you have the Bronx 2020 video of these looking, the two lights just in one spot. And this is 2012. So they're always around, whatever they are.
There just seems to be more of them today, and that more of them are being videotaped.
Or it's a slight uptick and more people are catching them on video. I'm using an Israeli military grade night vision scope, which I sold. I don't have this anymore. I had to set up a system to shoot through the scope. It didn't have a video output on it. It was very difficult to set up.
One quick point, I didn't complete my thought earlier about the wars, rumors of wars, possibility of nuclear war. But there always has been historically a huge uptick in UFO aerial phenomena prior to and in the onset of wars. World War II was a classic example. And, you know, we have these different factions of ETs and non-human beings involved. Some are trying to prevent, I think, nuclear war. Others may be for it. And there's also the soul capturing aspect where if people die, some of these beings will be around in their craft to hoover up their souls potentially. I think something like that
Yeah,
happens also.
it's a very good point. I didn't think about this. And there's one of them flying, just zipping by.
On one video I have on my Facebook wall, there's one of these objects that looks similar to that, zipping along, I think, the Hudson River at twice the speed of sound, Mach 2. No sonic boom, no windows broken, no car alarms going off. So, you know, these things, they're behaving very un-drone-like, some of them.
Yeah, the Hudson Valley, a friend of mine, and here's a photograph from, I think, 2008. And I didn't know what I was photographing until I looked at it later. It's just an example of what's out there. But in this particular photograph, you have that weird cloud phenomena where there's a hole, and I just happened to catch this moving near it. But there's also another object over to the right, which looks like your classic orb. But back then, James, this was staggering for me to have this evidence in a random photograph. Kind of gives you some perspective of like where I started, you know, from very basic photography, looking at little dots and stuff like that. Very uninteresting for a regular person. It's like, why are you wasting your time? Kind of thing. And here's just the inversion of it. And interesting how you have a square around the... it's almost like a force field in the pixel. Now, this is interesting. You know, speaking of these anomalies within the cloud, this is a Navy NEXAT radar, and someone's drawing. Okay, above is, you know, this area, right? That's New York City or Long Island. But somebody drew, how did they draw this in the cloud? Does this look like a cartoon character, like a cartoon dragon or something? What does this tell us about capability? Just gives you an idea. This is above New York City. They're always messing around. Something's always going on if you take the time to look. What causes this anomaly to break? Seems like it's breaking electrostatic bonds in the water molecule. Does a force field do that? I think this was coming out of the water here in this photograph. And some guys were fishing in the foreground. And these are the kinds of objects that are just moving across New Jersey. And could this be the Jersey Devil?
It's not aerodynamic. And then where's the lift coming from? Where's the propulsion coming from, right?
This is in the subway station. It's in our face. And I added this one in because I think this is in Korea. So we have to remember, and you mentioned the reptilian element here. It's very important because are these the bad guys? You know, they're
that's
operating.
A good one. I like that one.
Yeah. Yeah, they're operating in a very the unseen world. All right, see if I can unshare this here. I do have another video. I don't know if we have time. We probably don't have time to do that.
Oh, we can save it for another time. I mean,
okay.
We got a lot of good information out, and thank you so much, you know, for sharing, because you're adding historical context. That place has always been a hot spot for those who've taken the time. Actual research, actual field investigations,
right.
Instead of just going on with the mantra of drones,
right.
Which is the path of least resistance. Okay, everyone
right.
else is doing it. I'll do it too. So I don't, you know, I don't look like I'm sticking out of the crowd, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we're here to add context to all this. Sorry, I had to just turn my camera off for a second. Yeah,
okay.
So thank you so much for coming. And let's do this again. And, go ahead, and if you want to take the screen off, we can sign off, and I'll get this out as soon as I can. This is critically important information, and I want to thank you for coming on here again, Jeff.
Yeah, we had a good chat. I'm glad we did this. It did get me thinking about, you know, the broader concepts, and it got me looking back at William Bromley's book, which is, I'm going to read it again because I read it back in the early 90s. So I got it. I got to look at that again. And just for your, so your viewers know, the website to see the documentary is NewYorkSkywatch.com to get an idea of what the UFOs look like if you're out there a couple times a week for many, many years filming in the middle of New York City. So thank you so much, James. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And to our dear listeners and viewers out there, wherever you may be, whatever you may be doing, have a very pleasant time. We'll see you next time. Bye for now.